Welcome to Pool Party Radio, the number one podcast for Corn Gorn and all of the middle of the desert. I am your host, Parker, joined as always by co-host Jason Razorman.
Greetings and salutations, Parker.
How are you?
Spooky, that's how I am. We're coming upon the scariest time of year. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing some scary stuff, like watching nuptials, people getting married.
That
was beautiful. I saw a previous guest of this show, and dear old friend of ours, Specs, at his wedding day. It was great. Went to Ohio for that.
Well, that's cool that you got invited.
Listen, man. I'm sorry. I don't know what to say.
I mean, I don't know.
I didn't know you wanted to go. Did you want to go?
Well, you know, I just would like an invite. You know, I just wish he would have invited me. The last time I talked to him was on this show like 7 years ago. Last time I saw him, maybe about 10, 12 years ago. I just wish I would have gotten an invite, though. I feel like despite those things, you know.
Yeah, I hear you.
Nah,
Specs? You should have done it. And anybody listening, yeah, invite us to all your weddings. If you're getting married, we just want an invite.
Yeah, I just want an invite. Katie Rotz invited me to her wedding.
Hell yeah, there you go.
That's, you know, that's how you can tell that someone trusts and respects you. It's a sign of friendship. So invite us to your weddings. That's a new contest on Pool Party. Invite us to your weddings. And then we'll bring you an old cat shirt.
Yeah, and then we'll rate and review your wedding on the show.
Yeah, and your dogs. We'll rate and review dogs from the wedding. We'll, like, just shout it out. Like, if someone has one, like, if we notice someone has, like, a lap dog, like, during the actual wedding, like, even if the priest is talking, we'll just shout out, like, 9 out of 10 woofs.
We'll get on the PA system. Be like, if you could just stop the ring ceremony here. That dog up front, man, that's, like, get that dog 6 out of 5 bones. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. And yeah, we'll be like, all right, we're stopping the wedding early. Don't, before you guys say I do, everybody just bring your dogs up to the front. let's hug them.
This is now a dog judging ceremony. Thank you.
Yeah.
The best dog gets a koozie.
The best dog gets the wedding ring.
Hell yeah.
Just to wear around, you know?
Yeah. He's the goodest boy at the wedding. A few familiar faces from the radio station were there, obviously, like Specs being one of them, and then a couple other folks that had shows the same time that Jono and I were doing Pool Party Radio, namely Kevin Moss, Junk Food Diner, he was there, and other buddies, including a couple guys named Chris. There's like two Chris's at the table, Pat, lady friends to all of those folks. One of them mentioned that she knew me as Frisbee and recognized me because of my face being on the can koozer that we sold.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that was very sweet. I like to hear that. And I just told her, like, I hope your hand stays warm whenever you use that koozer. Like, I just hope it does the job. And I know it does, but I just want to wish her well on that, on that purchase.
And then you shook her hand, and it was like the firmest grip you'd ever felt, because her just being in proximity to the koozer gave her very large muscles.
That's right. Yes, her muscles were frighteningly large. But yeah, this it was a fun wedding and really enjoyable. That's all good. But it was also neat being in Ohio, like, around Halloween, which I haven't done for a while. Like, we're about a week away from really amping things up. But in Ohioville, in parts of Ohio, that's prime Halloween season. Like, the entire month of, well, months of, like, September and October. So I went down to Fairborn and checked out their main street, which includes a bunch of shops and even a old sock hop restaurant owned by the Foy family. So there's like Foy's Halloween costumes, Foy's five and dime store novelty gifts and costumes. Like everything has fucking costumes. And then there's like Foy's Haunted Halloween store. Nice. Or Haunted House store, excuse me. And it has a bunch of like off-kilter decorations. So basically it's like one of those Spirit Halloween stores exploded in a Main Street setting. So it's like a little bit of goofy Halloween crap is everywhere.
Yeah, it's like the best place to be for Halloween. Because, like, well, year-round they have the Foy's store, which is like Halloween-y shit. Like little toys and like Halloween candy and like masks and costumes and fake blood. Like they have that all year-round there. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know how this place stays in business. It must be like the American economy, the way it is with Christmas, where it's like just like that one time of year, like sustains them throughout the rest of the year. Unless people are buying fake blood on the regular. I don't know what these kids are up to these days. These millennials, you know, so they're probably putting it on their avocado toast. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear you. You know, but what I'm also like fake blood tastes just like the real thing, I think.
Well, it scares me like the real thing.
If it were real, it would scare me more.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, the place is cool. Like they have that place that used to have a monkey in it, but the monkey died or something. And then when Halloween happens, they open up the scary decorations store. And I think one other one, like maybe dedicated just to like super baby kids or something. And then,
yeah, there's like a kid focused costume store.
Yeah. Those open just for Halloween. So there's three Halloween stores. And then there's also the comic book store, which gets Halloween-y. That's downtown Fairborn. And there used to be like a role-playing game store.
There still is, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So I feel like they probably have some good cosplay role-playing events going on the inside, some LARPing. So like it's the whole town just becomes Halloween.
Yeah, it's a classic Main Street USA setup, like kind of a boulevard streets. So it's almost like three lanes between the sidewalks of this long strip of road. And a lot of the architecture appears to at least date back anywhere between like 20s or 30s up to like the 70s or 60s. Not a lot of renovation has gone on for most of these places. I think like the oldest place, the youngest place rather, might be the role playing building, the role playing, wherever that role playing game place is. Or tickets. Tickets is the other main restaurant there. But like the Foy's Diner looks just like a fucking sock hop diner. And Fairborn kind of adheres to a bunch of Americana anyway, since they still have a skate land, like a roller skating rink. That's right next to a drive-in. But the drive-in's does not have ownership right now. That was for sale. Kind of sucks.
Yeah, I think this is their first year not being in operation. Which,
that's a bummer.
Yeah. There's still like 30 other drive-ins in Dayton, but there used to be like 70. So I'm getting worried. I'm getting pretty worried. I'm going to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's a bit disheartening and kind of weird, because you think now, like more than ever, with cars having like better gas mileage and some just being electric, like this would be a prime place to set up some drive-ins. Like just have chargers at the stations where you'd have the speakers set up. Like each lot would just have multiple chargers, so you could just watch a movie and charge your fucking car, you know?
Yeah, that, and with normal movie prices being so expensive, you know, doing that a carload for $5 thing, it's probably some hot shit.
Yeah, exactly. And I did one of those too. I did go to a drive-in on a Friday, like the night I got in. What was it? Dixie Drive-In.
Oh yeah, that's a good one.
It's classic. Two screens and still rocking it. They were showing Rocky Horror Picture Show that evening, and that ruled.
Man, what the fuck? That's awesome.
Yeah, man. And they gave out kits when you came in, and like a little menu listing of all the things. I think like the troupe that usually does it opted to put it on, because all this stuff looked fucking great. Like, I mean, if you ever get the chance to drive down Dixie, for people who have not driven down Dixie, this documentary about it that we talked on the show about before, because it's just this classic long-ass winding road with all these defunct shops, now defunct shops, but it used to be like this prime place before highway systems really took off. So there are all these businesses and shit and the drive-in. And all that kind of went to the wayside, like after people started moving away from there.
Yeah.
But now it's just Dixie like Drive-In is still and... kicking it. And yeah, this looked like a real sweet professional job. I didn't really expect this high caliber of sweet shit to go along with it.
Did they charge you for the kits?
No, it came with the price, the mission. They're just like handing us shit as we're going in.
That's wild.
It was chill as fuck, dude.
Yeah, you went to that, like what, Thursday or something? Because I think we went to Rocky Horror on the same night.
Friday. I went on Friday.
Okay, I think I went on Thursday. Or maybe, I don't know, someday. And Thursday or Friday, one of the two. And because they had it here. So I saw on Instagram that we were there almost at the same time. And it was, you know, it made me feel like our souls were maybe connected in some sort of way. I don't know if you also felt that.
I feel that most times, to be honest with you.
Okay, okay.
I remember that too. I was looking at your Instagram. In fact, I'm pulling it up now because I'm a real creep about this kind of stuff. To seeing when you posted about it, because I think it was like pretty damn near close. And nope, I cannot find what I'm looking for.
It's on my work one, so I don't know. But anyway, so like, but yeah, so I went to the one here, which like they, I assumed like it was in Hanford, which is like this next town over, and I assumed it was going to be at like the theater there because like they have this Fox Theater where like bands play and they show old movies. It's like, you know, an old theater from the 20s. But when we got there, I realized that it was at the auditorium where, like, they do the wrestling shows.
Okay.
And I suddenly got super worried because, you know, and my fears were confirmed when we got in because, like, they just had, like, this tiny little screen up on the stage because, like, there's, like, a tiny little stage. Like, I guess they do, like, school talent shows there or something. I don't know what they do there when it's not wrestling. But and then they had just, you know, a sea of folding chairs, like steel folding chairs, probably left over from the wrestling show.
Huh?
And so, so you had to watch the movie, not in any nice theater, but like on a bunch of folding chairs. And it was like like really uncomfortable. It started like an hour late. They charged like $6 for the kits to have fun. No one was dressed up. And I was talking to the wife about it and... like, she says, like, no one ever does Rocky Horror here. Like, the last time she remembers it happening was, like, one time somebody did it at a theater, like, in 1993 or something. And it just really bummed me out because it's, like, I mean, A, it's, like, a tiny, small, conservative place. And, like, even the hosts were talking about how, like, they weren't allowed to, like, go crazy because of how conservative it was there. Like, if somebody dressed like Frankenfurter, the cops would break down the doors and arrest everybody. Like,
Jesus.
Like, Footloose. But yeah, like, I mean, I don't know what it is. I mean, like growing up in Dayton, like you just get like with drive-ins, like you just get spoiled by shit because in Dayton at one point when we were in college, there were, and a little bit before, like the Neon Movies downtown would show Rocky Horror every Friday at midnight and the Page Manor in Fairborn would show Rocky Horror every Friday at midnight. And they were always accompanied by like, you know, these affairs, they call them, where like the people would do the shadow cast thing where they would act it out the same time it was on the screen and like a whole big to do. Yeah. And so I don't know, like being here and hearing these stories of like, it's only once every 20 years that we get to see Rocky Horror. It just made me want to cry. I hate this place.
Yeah, that's the weirdest shit. Like, and this is like from California. Like, I know it's not LA, but still, like, you know, that's the fucking coastal state. I feel like this is a weird revelation about the misconceptions about like flyover states like Ohio, because that just blows my mind. And it's only in this one regard. Like, I mean, fuck, it's just well, I mean, no, it's not.
Yeah, also drive-ins.
To us, it's just Rocky Horror because we were so saturated with it. Like, I remember going to Blind Bob's and they were doing Rocky Horror there. Like, they cleared out some tables. It's this bar where they usually have bands, but they had to do the shadow casting right. They end up, like, clearing some of the tables off, moving those tables to the stage, and just letting the actors do their thing in the middle of the goddamn floor. Like, how wild is that? Just, like, people running around in underpants, and you're just like, sweet. Can I also get, like, a beer, please? And to have like so many troops that, like, when I was in college, I knew different people who were playing different roles in different troops. I'm like, oh yeah, they're at the Page Manor one. This one is doing like the touring one. They'll go to some of the outskirt cities that will end up hosting it. So yeah, that is really strange. And again, like, it might just be with this one thing, but that's really fucking funny that you're on California and they're like, please wear your modest clothing and try not to look at the screen when Tim Curry's on it.
Yeah, like there was one dude, like one super old dude, like not super old, but I mean, he was like, I don't know, maybe in his mid-40s or something. And he was just, you know, he had like the Frankfurter garb on, and like people were just like shocked, like gawking. Like one lady stopped him and she was like, excuse me, but are you part of the LGBT community? And she was in line to watch the movie. And I mean, yeah, it was wild, man. It's a wild place out here.
That's fucking crazy. And yeah, bummer, man. I wish you guys would have been able to join us for this experience, because it was a ton of fucking fun. There weren't like an enormous, like, it wasn't crowded or anything. I would say it was about like half full as far as people who were coming to see like the one screen that was showing it.
That's very optimistic of you to say.
It was?
Well, okay, you
oh yeah,
said
it was
half
full. All right, yeah. Walk. but it was super fun. Like, people were, you could hear like distant shouts of people shouting back at the screen. This performance did not have actors because they don't have like a stage below the theater screen, so it's kind of pointless. Mm-hmm. But it was actually excellent to see that movie on a massive outdoor drive-in screen. They were clearly just playing a DVD, like, or at least, I mean, I doubt they had a digital print or anything of it. It didn't have the menu come up or anything like that. And they ran like the typical drive-in previews, you know, of like the dancing popcorn and shit.
Nice.
Like, get your concessions at the lobby or at the concession stand. But no, it looked really beautiful. And it was fun to watch out there. Like, I didn't really expect much. In fact, people I went with and I were just like, oh, it's something to do. And, you know, the movie's usually pretty fun, but it kind of put it in a different perspective. Like, this is an excellent drive-in movie to watch on a drive-in.
Yeah.
And I don't think that was the original intent. I think it was just meant to be kind of like it, probably because it's such a send-up to like all the 50s sci-fi that it's paying homage to.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably why it works so well. So it just got me thinking, like, more shit like that would be just awesome. I know they do it a lot of times in Tennessee. Memphis does a couple of theme drive-in nights at the, I think it's Malco Theater. I might be pronouncing that wrong, but I keep meaning to go out there.
Yeah, drive-ins are fun. I went to one. There's only like one in all of California, and I went to it over the summer, and it was very fun. Got to see a Planet of the Apes movie. But yeah, I hear a lot of those Midwest ones are doing good work. Kevin Moss always talks about his adventures to drive-ins, where he gets to see like my top 10 favorite movies of all time, all in 35mm at the drive-in. So I'm always very jealous of his stories. I would like to go to a cool drive-in one day. But concerning Rocky Horror, I posted about this in Podcast Town. I'm not completely settled on this. I got to mull it over a little bit. But every time I watch Rocky Horror, I always feel like the There's a Light song, like they could just cut that one. I feel like it slows the movie down a little too much right at the beginning when you're trying to have fun. What do you think, Mr. Frisbee? Cut it or leave it? Hit or shit?
I think that one's a hit. The one that grinds my gears is the last one, Superheroes. I feel like that one's way too slow. And even though it's like trying to end, you're really just leaving off of Curry's performance and I'm Going Home, and then Riff Raff and Magenta like basically shooting him down. I don't know if you could follow it up with anything. But this last time watching on the big screen, like, they were all bangers. They all looked good. and sounded good for that matter, just coming out of like car stereos. But it was super fun. So yeah, I'm a bit biased in that regard. So you think it slows it down a bit too much? Even that part with Riff Raff singing about like Flow Morpheus Flow?
Man, well, that part's good. I like that part a lot. But yeah, I don't know. I just always feel like, I don't know. I guess maybe if, like that would move up the Time Warp and then you'd be a whole, you'd be front heavy, I guess. But I don't know. Like I feel like it just kind of slows the movie down. It's like you're getting right into it. They just did the Damn It Janet song and you're all pumped up. You're ready to go. The criminologist is telling you that he wants to tell you a story. And now all of a sudden, like, there's a ballad. And it's like, come on, I just want to get to it. I just want to get to the castle. Let's have fun.
Yeah, I think that getting rid of that would make it a bit too top heavy, like you said. Because then, like, just jumping to Time Warp, like, that's the ultimate banger.
That's true.
I mean, at least it's the one that, like, still holds weight. Like, playing Sweet Transvestite now probably is kind of strange because it's outdated.
It's still it's still a hot track, though.
Yeah, I mean, Tim Curry, man, like, the fact that it came out when it did, and it's Tim Curry doing it, like, that's the only staying power that it has. But Time Warp is unstoppable. Like, mm-hmm. It's just, you know, one of the best songs ever.
That's true.
I just wanted to see Shock Therapy. I remember Blockbuster had that back in Heber Heights, and I kept intending to rent it, but never got around to it. I was watching too much other dumb shit or playing video games.
It's really good. I think the soundtrack might be better. The movie's not better. The movie's good, but the soundtrack...
Music. Yeah, okay.
Oh, it's full of bangers. Hot bangers.
Mm-hmm. Bangers and mash. A banger in the mouth or in the ear hole.
You get that right. Speaking of bangers, being in the ear holes, Mr. Frisbee.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was going to segue into Are You Afraid of the Dark, but I feel like maybe we should segue into Wayne's Podcast Down News. He'll give us a banger right in the mouth. I'm sure of it.
Sounds good. I'm certain, too.
I don't know if that's a reference to something sexual or if he would just punch us in our faces, but I'm sure he'd oblige us either way.
Yeah. I want the news...
Yeah, so, all right, here's Wayne's Podcast Town News. I'll play it. My soundboard's still broke. Full disclosure here, everybody. Soundboard's broken. I can't play drops. So I'll play it through my phone, like a janky-ass sort of show here. But we'll probably edit it in, like the full actual version into the end of the show. So, but here's, so you can hear all the pixel qualities, the high def, the high def version that he originally sent me. So So here it is. Here's Wayne's Podcat Town News.
Fucking busy. Actually, I haven't done anything. Podcat Town News. Let's see. Ilcon's gone. They got canceled finally. Thank God. We finally actually got rid of that shithole. I would like Sarah and Al to maybe do their own show. Or even like I said, Parker, give Sarah the freaking wheel. You know, let her drive the boat a little bit. You know, everybody's craving some Sarah, you know what I mean? What else? Sean's a deliberate fucking tool bag. That guy Matt. Okay, let me get it out. That guy Matt who wants to take my job and go lick my fucking ass. Because he ain't getting it, first off. I haven't quit. I took a couple weeks off. Me reading the ratings of this town really, you know, was boffo. So I took a couple weeks off. I mean, unpaid, but I took a couple weeks off. So, what can you do? Matt, you give me something good. Send it to me. I'll look at it, and maybe I'll let you have my job for a couple weeks, you know? But, you know, let you try it out. Who knows? Anyway, this town sucks. I don't know what else to tell you about it. There's a whole bunch of podcasters podcasting their shit. There's this new guy who's got some kind of, like, rusty asshole podcast, and he just drives me nuts. He's so infuriating, because it's just, like, the worst shit, and it's like, ugh, do we need more, pop culture podcast or horror pop culture podcast? No, we don't. Dude, just, like, hang yourself from, like, your living room ceiling fan. Like, just, ugh. A lot of people don't like me. They think I'm angry. They think I don't like anything. I listen to every podcast. I listen to that rusty rivet up my butt type of podcast. I don't know. It sucks. It's terrible. It's awful. I don't know. I don't have much else to say. I know this is like, you know, let's do it. let's get a show out. But I'm sweaty, and I don't want to be that way. So I'm going to pull the plug and say...
Is that it?
He didn't even say anything. Pull the old switcheroo. The old Bret Easton Ellis ending.
Oh.
Yeah, well, thanks for the Podcast Town News. Finally, Wayne, you obviously work for the post office with your work ethic. Not saying in Podcast Town News for the last, it wasn't a couple of weeks. It's been like 6 months. The last email I got from him was from August.
To be honest, though, I think wasn't the last one he was on they did news for was when that Sarah Murphy was on?
Yeah, it is hard. I think so. It's a hard one to top.
I just went back and listened to that this past week. Like his news reading where it just took us all off guard. He's switching it up so frequently. Didn't say kill yourself this time. Mm-hmm. We're just kind of waiting there. With anticipation, take it back to Rocky Horror. But yeah. He's like, that one especially knocked our fucking socks off. Like, I don't think we've laughed that hard in a long damn time.
That's true.
So that was a funny.
He earned his 2 months off. You're right.
Yeah.
I apologize, yeah. Wayne. Yeah, I like that he brings something nobody likes him.
People hate me. I don't understand why.
Yeah. If Sarah Murphy wants to have the show when we're done with it, I'm fine with that. Would you be all right with that?
Yeah, totally capable. I mean, she obviously has the means to get the best work out of people. Like, given that I got a sneaking suspicion from the way she was talking about that news report last time, that she had something to do with the hilarity of that one newscast of Wayne's.
Mm-hmm. Allegedly. We can't say for sure.
Yeah, I don't have a paper trail yet. Mm-hmm. Yet. But those emails, though. There's got to be those emails.
Yeah. So it's all yours, Sarah Murphy. We, if you want full party, we'll sign the deed over to you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so speaking of signing the deed over, we have to talk about Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Perfect segue. Hey, before we get into that, when we do sign the deed over to her, mm-hmm. I wasn't watching wrestling, like WWF or WWE, whatever it was, in the early 2000s. But I would catch glimpses of it every so often. And there were these reassurances that I made, like, a fairly wise decision in cutting out my life for a while, because every time I would switch it on, there would be these weird ceremonious things taking place in the middle of the ring. Like, they'd bring a desk out, mm-hmm. and like cover the ring in carpet and hold like these business meetings there. They're like going over their fucking tax returns or something, like wearing glasses and just going over it with a fine pen and their lawyer looking over. And these would be for ostensibly like, arranging a match. Like, here's what we're going to do. We're going to have this match at the next pay-per-view, and it's going to be you two. Fine. I feel like they could have handled that business off camera and brought it in, but of course, like, the desk will be broken in half by somebody pile-driving the other person into it. I missed all that stuff, but I like the idea of setting up business in a wrestling ring now. Like, I used to be against it. Now I'm all for it. In fact, I wish, like, my daily office work, my notary desk was at like a wrestling ring, but I want to hold that transaction over in that manner. So maybe like when we're all in California this coming week, if Sarah Murphy's not busy, we can rent a wrestling ring, put carpet in there, put a desk on there, and get all professional and like figure out what we're going to do. And then who knows, like maybe somebody will get powerbombed through the desk before we're all said and done. Or maybe that's how like the transaction needs to occur. Like, we sign it, stamp it, I'll notarize it, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I'll get my license there. And then somebody gets powerbombed through the desk, and then we shake hands and leave.
Yeah, I think that would be good. I think that that's probably how it'll go if we can set aside some time. It looks like it's going to be hard. We talked a little bit about this privately. But if we can sign the papers, get it notarized, get everybody on board with seeing Saw 8 with us, I think that will probably end with Sean Byron powerbombing one of us. I know he doesn't want to see it.
Yeah. And we've all talked about like our previous history of emulating pro wrestling moves. I think you guys did it more than I did. So I'm willing to take the fall on this. And I guess like it can be an assisted powerbomb. So like Sarah Murphy can like push my shoulders on the way down. Mm-hmm. While you or Sean like actually physically power bombs me.
Yeah. And then Sarah Murphy will give you like the DX crotch chop.
Yeah. That's again, that's like the stamp, the official stamp.
Yeah.
It's like, and crotch chop and great doing business with you.
Yeah.
I look forward to a hearty podcasting career on Pool Party.
Yeah. I'm also trying to get Sean to see Thor, which I feel like he doesn't want to do. But
that's going to be a wonderful film, though.
I think
it's going to be great.
I think it's going to be good. I think he might like it, even though he hasn't seen the first two. But I think he would probably dig it. So we're trying to figure it out. We're going to try to see it like maybe after Goblin or before Goblin or something next week.
Cool.
I would love to watch a movie like this with Sean. Watch his eyes light up. Watch him rediscover his innocence.
And yeah. Learn what magic feels like again.
Yeah, yeah. It'll be 10 times better than the time he saw La La Land and felt magic. Mm-hmm. About Hollywood.
Oh, speaking of feeling magic, I forgot to mention this part too. I got to eat at Skyline while I was in Ohio.
Oh my God, how good was it?
Here's the thing. They've got a limited run for like the next couple months of I don't know why they're doing it in fucking October, but it's like a New Orleans inspired like Mardi Gras dog where for the link for the hot dog, I've substituted their own version of like andouille sausage.
Oh my Christ.
It's got this nice crisp bite back to it and like all the andouille spices that you'd find in sausage, in that type of sausage. So it's got like an extra kick. Like you don't even need hot sauce on it, man.
God damn. I'm using a handkerchief to slowly dab sweat beads off of my forehead right now.
Oh, I thought you said you were just going to like slowly dab.
I'm just going to slowly
like millennial style. Yeah. Like you're putting your arms up in a dabbing fashion.
Slowly.
Slowly. Like I'm doing this slowly because I'm honored by this retelling of the tale.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was really tasty.
Man,
But you know, it's Skyline, so like one will do it, you know?
Yeah. Well, one could do it.
Unless you really like, speaking of stuff that's scary, you're going to have like a scary time in the toilet later on.
Oh my God.
Is my point. Like, I feel like two would really do that. Mess up some guts.
Yeah, that's probably true.
But for like just a one-time flavor experience, hell yeah. It was great.
Well, I want those flavors.
Mm-hmm.
But do we want the
flavors? Yeah.
Do we want the flavors of season 5 of Are You Afraid of the Dark, though, Frisbee? That's the question.
Yes.
All right.
Season 5. This was like the last of the original consecutive run. They wouldn't come back on for another couple years after this.
Oh, is that right?
I think so. Let me consult my manual.
Yeah, there's 3 years of a break between 5 and 6. So, yeah, this is...
Yeah, it would end in 1996 and reappear in 1999.
In the year 2000. all right, episode 1 of season 5. This is called The Tale of the Dead Man's Float.
Zeke. I'd like to mention... Oh, please.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to jump into the commentary as well. But you're already into it. Oh. You were saying Zeke is good at chemistry?
Yeah, you can have the next one.
Okay.
Zeke is good at chemistry, but not at girls. He's good at science, but he's not good at fucking.
Poor Zeke.
His photosynthesis style is good. Fuck style is bad.
Mm-hmm.
His chemistry style good. No good at cunnilingus. When he befriends.
Excellent at chemistry, terrible at biology.
Oh.
That's the obvious joke there, but so obvious. Like, that was in a fucking Wonder Years dialogue.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
So Zeke, not good at fucking, in parentheses. When he befriends Clarice, she teaches him a good fuck style. She teaches him how to swim at the school pool. However, the pool has a secret. It was built on top of a graveyard and is haunted by the angry ghost who takes vengeance upon anyone who dares to swim in the pool. This guest stars a young Jay Baruchel as Joe. You may remember him from Million Dollar Baby.
Mm.
This story is told by new storyteller Stig. Frank moved away over the summer, and he's been replaced by a guy who's basically just like not a, like Frank, but unattractive.
Yeah.
He's one of Gary's little brother's friends. They make him wear a sack.
Just the worst. He's an asshole.
He sucks. He sucks. Like, they make him wear like a bag on his head to get to the secret spot where they do the stories. And then right when they take the bag on his head, like, immediately he kisses Kiki. And it's like, come on, dude. Like, that's not cool. He can't.
Yeah, he's a gross fuck up.
Unconsensual.
And
non-consensual.
The only one that likes him is Gary's younger brother. And Gary's younger brother, like, who used to be the most obnoxious one, like, he sees all this obnoxious behavior and he's like, I mean, come on, Stig, just tone it down a bit, you know? So even he's like, God, this guy's super annoying. And that's coming from a super annoying kid like me.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives you an idea about Stig. Also, I've talked about, like, the friends I used to have back in middle school. They kind of look like Stig. So even though I'm like,
yeah,
poo-pooing him as like a not attractive Frank, it's also to say that like Frank was a good looking storyteller and mm-hmm. Stig is not.
Yeah.
He's an indoor kid. He's very pale, very dark hair, and he has like no social skills because he's like trying to sneak kisses. It's just the worst.
Yeah. Stig, for all the shit we're gonna talk about him, I would definitely have played a lot of Twisted Metal with him back in like 1995.
Yeah, yeah, like this kid would definitely like call me over to play Beavis and Butthead on Sega Genesis,
mm-hmm.
and go through some like just stacks of Fangoria magazines,
yeah,
and Mad magazines, and Cracked.
He seems like a real sweet guy now that I think about it. I actually kind of like
him. Yeah, it's just like that's probably why Gary's younger brother is such sweet friends with him. And the story isn't bad. Like, you know, for Are You Afraid of This Dark Storytelling, this one's kind of neat. Like, it starts off with the flashback to 1954, and it looks period appropriate, and there's, like, some small funny goofs before it gets really horrendous. Like, the guy who's supposed to be lifeguarding the pool does a classic horror movie trope of sneaking away from his responsibilities and basically letting a Friday the 13th happen behind him of a young kid drowning in the pool. This is actually where our logo came from for Pool Party Radio, now that I think about it.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That is true.
I also dig the pool zombie in this one that happens later. Like, it takes a while for anything to actually get going in this story. There's, like, a very slow build. Feels a lot like just the slowest burn, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But the monster itself looks pretty sweet, and they have it, like, kind of skimming through the water. Kind of looks like what I imagine the Crimson Ghosts would look like in the movie The Crimson Ghost. But instead, they weren't, like, this good looking.
Yeah.
Like, which is weird to say.
Yeah, if the Crimson Ghost was being eaten by the blob, it would look like this guy.
Yeah. Oh, and also, like, the movie Crimson Peaks, where they had, like, the bloody ghosts or the murky red ghosts. That's what this one looks like.
Yeah. You remember that time in that movie when that guy gets J.O.'d by his sister?
Yeah.
That was wild.
That movie took a lot of fierce turns towards incest,
mm-hmm.
that I did not anticipate. And I heard people like blow this off as like, well, I mean, that's gothic literature. I'm like, really? I thought it was just ravens and not just a ton of incest. So yeah,
I thought it was about castles. Yeah, I thought gothic literature was about castles and shit, not about sister J.O.'s, but. Whatever.
There's a guy who knew how to fuck, I guess.
Yeah, that guy was good
old
at it.
Relatives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, early on in this, like, there's an old janitor who, like, knows about like the story of the ghost and stuff.
Yeah.
And early on, before I knew that he was like going to play anything in the plot, like there's a scene where Zeke is like doing some chemistry in class and he makes a big mess. And then the teacher's just like, all right, bring in the janitor to clean this up. Or like the kid starts cleaning it up at first. And then the teacher's like, oh, no, 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 you don't clean that up. The janitor cleans it up. And then this old feeble janitor comes in and just has like the biggest frown on his face. And I was like, oh, this poor guy.
Make the janitor do it. He knows what he did.
Mm-hmm. But then it turns out he knows about like all the murders and stuff. You would think that a school would like maybe close down their pool if like several dozen students had died in it over the years, but maybe not. Maybe not. I mean, they did pay, you know, I mean, probably took them a lot to like get that levy passed or whatever to get money funding for the pool. So I guess maybe you can't just close it. There's a creepy.
It's also. Oh, go ahead.
Please go ahead.
It's Canada in the mid 90s. So unlike our No Child Left Behind policy now, they probably had like, yeah, a couple of kids left behind, like floating in the pool.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the original. When they originally wrote No Child Left Behind, that's what it was about. It was about not letting children be taken by ghosts in pools. But then it got rewritten, you know, like how everything does in Washington.
Oh, those fat cats. Let me tell you what. Mm-hmm. What were you going to say, though? You had something.
Oh, I was going to say that there's a scene where, like, there's a tarp covering the pool, and, like, the janitor or somebody's, like, looking at it, or, like, maybe the kids, and, like, it starts, like, bubbling, and, like, mm-hmm. I thought that was, like, kind of genuinely creepy.
Yeah. Yeah, that pool, when it was darkened, and for that scene in particular, was effectively creepy. Like, this was an effective episode. It's weird to have it narrated by Stig, though, because when he's, like, leading into it, I think I had down that he's describing Zeke, and he uses the words, he describes him as one of those dips. And it immediately follows that with, guess you could say he's the smartest loser in school. So Zeke, just pulling no punches with his aggressive description. Like, this guy is a real Bukowski with how mean he is about people he's describing.
I like his writing style.
He's like, this fucking idiot just got spooked by a dumbass ghost. The end.
Yeah, that's very similar to my writing style. Like, I'll be writing something about like a local theater troupe doing some mm-hmm. Hamlet, and I'll be like, check out these fucking dipshit losers doing some Hamlet.
Some assholes on stage this weekend.
Yeah, these cocksuckers are over here doing Shakespeare like a bunch of doofuses.
Your picture caption for like kids at a carnival with their faces painted is like, look at these turds.
Yeah. The zombie is scary. I think you're underselling the zombie. Zombie's super scary, and I think this episode's like maybe one of the better episodes, I feel. Like, I feel like this is a really good one.
Yeah, I was impressed. And I don't mean to undersell it. I thought this zombie was really good. Like, again, I thought it was better than some of the shit that was in Crimson Peak.
Yeah, absolutely. There's also a scene that's like remarkably similar to It Follows, where like they find out that the ghost is made of water, so like they have to, what is it, like they throw powder on him or something? What is it that they do in this? They have to do something.
It's all this chemistry shit. Like, it gets real Breaking Bad for a minute, where the kid is like throwing out some specific knowledge, and it's some sort of like acidic orange, something orange. But it's like a powder that when interacting with water, it heats up, or at least like this particular style of it. So ends up clouding the pool with like this red cloudy substance. It looked like it's blood that had been dispersed, and that's how they find the ghost. But yeah, it felt like very It Follows-y, because they're panicking at a pool, like this ghostly spectral form of Marco Polo that we saw in It Follows. Except they're not like waving a gun around or throwing electronics in there.
Yeah, yeah. And then, yeah, like the old guy reveals that the place was built on a graveyard, which, like, I don't know. I feel like maybe a school would not be built on a graveyard, but I mean, who knows?
Funny you should say that.
Your school was built on a graveyard.
Vandalia Butler.
Oh my God.
Had a graveyard, like, right outside on the property of the school. All those graves were moved. All but one. Now, I'm pretty sure they got all of them, but they moved them. And they built the Board of Education there instead.
Man, that's the scariest thing I ever heard in my life.
Isn't it fucked up?
Leave it so fucked up. Leave it to the American government to just build shit over graveyards, though. Am I right? Like the entire infrastructure of America. Oh. You know what I mean?
All North America, I mean, because this is in Canada.
Oh yeah, that's true.
So it's all fucked.
Mm-hmm.
Careful, kids. If you're going to school, you're probably walking on top of dead fucking faces every day.
Mm-hmm. Walking on dead faces. Can't believe this shit. This goddamn America. It's making me so upset. this episode rules.
The ending's great, too. Like, it, after their obvious success, because it's, you know, it's Are You Afraid of the Dark? The kids are actually chilling together. I think this is, like, the first romantic ending that we've experienced. And it's not, like, this weird, gross thing. They're just, like, cuddling up and studying chemistry. And then she goes and starts swimming.
Oh, yeah, yeah, really, yeah. Slick. Yeah, that was a good, like, happy ending. I liked it.
Yeah. So, yeah, this episode, The Tale of the Dead Man's Float, kind of hits all the right beats and is, like, a decent Are You Afraid of the Dark episode.
Yeah. Also, Dead Man's Float is my favorite Oingo Boingo song.
Yeah, it's excellent. It's a Dead Man's Float. everyone's invited. Mm-hmm. This should be, you know, this episode is a very pool party-esque episode. I think we're kind of biased towards it on that.
That's also true.
That point. Mm-hmm. The next episode, though.
Yeah. What's going on with this next episode?
Next episode, episode 2 of season 5, The Tale of the Jagged Sign. And tales, a young girl named Claudia goes to visit her relatives at the boarding house for the elderly that they own. She's bored at first, but soon learns the legend of a ghost who haunts a special spot on a mountain in the woods. Her time spent away from home gets even more unusual when she actually sees the ghost himself. It's up to Claudia and her friend, who remains nameless, to help the ghost reunite with his love before it's too late. So this is like another ghost story. Mm-hmm. It's told by Kiki. Kiki, the young tough of the group. And this one is like a significant drop off from the previous one. Because we've gotten from like seeing this sick, just morbid looking, sweet ass skeleton, hairy, bloody ghost skimming around a pool to the classic trope that Are You Afraid of the Dark? Hey, we're running low on budget expenses typically applies. It's like, just put this guy in suspenders. He'll look old timey. And that's the ghost. Like, no ghoul eye makeup or anything like that. No phasing effect that I can remember, but just looks like a dude waving towards you, which granted could be spooky, but he just looks like it clear as day. That's just some kid wearing suspenders.
Yeah. I mean, they were like very lightly colored suspenders, but
they were the most scary suspenders I've ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. Yeah, this episode, yeah, I hate these ghosts. We were getting real sick of the ghosts last season, and yeah, this is not any better. And it's like there's this whole story about how, like, they start off by saying, like the ghost, he'll possess you if you look at him, and it's like, I don't know if that was, like, supposed to be some sort of red herring, because he turns out to be, like, a nice guy ghost. He's just, like, he misses his girlfriend. Like, there's this whole story. Like, he paints this shit on a wall, on a rock, that looks like absolutely nothing. It's just, like, one stupid squiggle mark, and it's supposed, like, that's the scary jagged sign.
Yeah.
And then the kids, the two kids, they find out, you know, that the ghost, he, like, was gonna get, he was gonna elope with a lady, and the lady's parents wouldn't let her go, so he died or something, and then, like, now he's there waiting for her, and then it turns out that the lady is, like, a super old senile old bat now, and she almost burns down the house making soup, and it's just like, I don't care. I'm sick of this shit.
Me too. Yeah, this was a bummer of an episode, and all the stuff with, like, the dementia old lady doesn't even mix that well with the ghost story that's going on. She makes a few mentions, like, oh, I used to look like you and all this stuff. But then, like, the way she almost burns down the house isn't from like overcooking anything. It's like she has some amount of dementia because you can see like when they get to her in the kitchen that she's put a plastic bowl on a heating plate. And, you know, obviously like the plastic's melting and everything's getting everywhere. She's like, oh, what happened? I was just trying to make soup. It's like used plastic. What happened? This is what happens when you add plastic to heat. Like it just starts melting.
Yeah, it's pretty fucked up when you can't even make soup, old lady.
Mm-hmm. So like stuff like that. I don't know how that adds into the story aside from they're just trying to get like, you know, something urgent to happen. Maybe just speed up the action a little bit. It's like, well, what if the wacky old lady just like started putting plastic on heating elements? Mm-hmm. Got nothing to do with ghosts. Has nothing to do with like her approach to this one kid, or just makes her less of a suspect of like the person of desire for this ghost. But obviously it's her. Like this is the person that the ghost has been waiting around for. The young lady is misinterpreted by the ghost as being the love interest. So it's only when like the old lady comes out. She kind of wanders out there on her own, doesn't she? Like, mm-hmm. They don't really have anything to do with it. They're just kind of looking at the rock for a while, and they're like, well, let's go find the old woman or whatever. Turns out she's, like, beaten feet to middle of the woods, meets up with the ghost, and then they disappear. And they turn to light, and then they turn into doves, and they land into their hands. And, I mean, I'm not making this up. It's just that ridiculous. And the rock painting squiggle, which again, just a line, turns into a full painting of like a just graffiti art of what's supposed to be a dove, but it has like no beak and no like identifying features to make it a dove. So it's like a bigger, whiter glob of a mess on the rock.
Yeah. And it's just like obviously done with like White House paint. Like it's bad. It doesn't even look good.
Yeah. Oh, and they try to like make all these high tension moments of them going along this cliff face. But it's not that perilous. But the kids like are really acting their asses off trying to be like, oh man, this is just don't look down. And it's like maybe a 3-foot drop, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's bad. It's a bad episode. Also, like there was another episode like this where like an old lady like was like in love with a ghost and stuff. And it's like, what is it with all these like old people in Canada where like if like where they like stay like within 1 mile of the ghost that they lost when they were young, like their entire lives? Like why didn't this lady move away at some point?
Like, I don't know. Maybe they just love murder. That's it. Remember when that kid died here? I think I loved that kid. Well, I know where I'm living.
Yeah, or like, why couldn't this ghost like find the lady? Like, she was right down the street, dude. Like, just get off the rock and go look. But
yeah,
he never does. Also, like the lady when she dies, like she dies of natural causes, and then gets to be a ghost with her ghost boyfriend, and she goes from being like 98 to being 17, and it's like, I don't know, wasn't that kind of like what's that? Like how so? Like nothing from 17 to 95 in your life was like, I don't know, it makes it seem really like her life was like so super sad, although I guess it was because the love of her life died. But like also what if this dude's into MILFs? Like he's getting this ghost puss. She's 17 now again. Like maybe he would have preferred her to be 35, you know? Maybe he wants that MILF puss
for the rest. Yeah, that may have been on the director's cut of this episode where like once she transforms the guy goes, well, it's not what I wanted, but
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I actually have the DVDs. There's like a 15-minute long. This episode, when it originally aired, was an hour episode. And there's like a really long conversation between the two at the end where like he's just like, where they're trying to like negotiate about what age she should be at a ghost, as a ghost. Like,
can't you just go back to how you looked?
Yeah, like, he's like, I'm super into MILF stuff. I've been a ghost for 95 years, so I don't really want to smash a 17-year-old ghost. Like, it's kind of weird. There's probably laws against that. Probably not in Canada, though. But in normal, civilized countries, 18 is the age of consent. Not 12, like in France.
Yeah.
Not 14, like in England. whatever the fuck it is, you gross pieces of shit out there in Europe. So the next episode is called The Tale of Station 109.1. An episode that no young kid would understand because it's about radio.
Yeah. Only 90s kids get this.
That's true. Chris is obsessed with death.
Cool. Period.
Cool. That's cool. One time when I was a little kid, my dad thought I was obsessed with death, so he wanted me to go see a psychiatrist, but I never went.
Would you say that you were obsessed with death?
Well, I liked horror movies, and like I thought it was really funny in like that original Pete and Pete episode that like they hung out with that dead squid. And I thought that was like a super funny joke, so that's like the main reason why they thought. I just liked funny jokes. I liked surreal humor in Jason movies. Leave me alone.
So, I hear you, man.
So, okay, Chris is obsessed with death. His brother Jamie, played by Ryan Gosling, who emotes more in this than I've ever seen in his entire fucking post Are You Afraid of the Dark career.
But I gotta tell you, like, anytime he was on screen and had no dialogue, was just like staring at whoever was talking or doing a reaction shot, I was thinking of you. I'm like, I wonder how Parker's taking this right now.
It's very upset. Jamie tries to get him to snap out of it by locking him in a hearse. It seems like that would do the opposite. And turning up the radio full blast. Upon the prank's conclusion, Chris discovers a mysterious radio station due to the car turning itself to 109.1 FM, which is where a logical contraption will be, since they got canceled from Radio Valencia.
Oh. Well, yeah. Turn your radio dials to 109.1 FM.
Yeah. When Chris goes to the station, a squawky voice disc jockey named Roy, played by Gilbert Gottfried, makes him for a dead man.
Mistakes him for a dead man. I've got mistakes here.
My laptop's very far away. My face. And puts him in line to go to the afterlife while a disturbed man is trying to find his way, quote unquote, home. This is a long summary. Jamie realizes his mistake when he learns that the disturbed man is a ghost and rushes to save Chris. Ghosts reject Chris for being too young to die. And DJ Roy faces his boss's wrath. That's a long one.
Wait, I thought you're never too young to die.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. That's what Stargrove told me.
Yeah.
But apparently not true.
That is a long ass summary among these one or two sentence summaries. In fact, like, I didn't find it to be this convoluted or all these details that necessary, but the next episode that we'll be talking about, I'm still, like, even though I rewatched it in full, it was, not in full, I was just skipping to the parts that I thought I had the information. Never mind. That's probably why it doesn't make sense. But they only give, like, one sentence or two sentences for that one. Anyway, yeah. This, The Tale of Station 109.1. Very Beetlejuicy. It's a Beetlejuice waiting room where a lot of this takes place, and just better lit, you know?
Yeah, that's true. This kid, whatever, isn't it, Chris, he's like very much the Lydia. He's a Lydia. At one point, he's playing video games on his like home computer, like by candlelight. I think that's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you can tell he's obsessed with death. Also, at one point, he dips like a shrimp, like an uncooked shrimp, into mashed potatoes. And it's like, what the fuck are you guys eating in Canada? How is this a normal meal?
Oh, that's like shrimp and grits, but shrimp and potatoes. It's kind of like how poutine is like gravy and fries, where we would have chili cheese and fries.
Is that a real thing? Are people really putting shrimp inside of grits?
No. Well, shrimp and grits, yeah, that's a thing.
Oh, I didn't know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's like a popular breakfast item, at least around here, like Arkansas and Louisiana.
Well, shit.
It's pretty good, honestly.
All right.
It's like, I don't know, you just got to really like shrimp and also grits, I guess. Somebody posted in podcast, I think it was Corey, posted in podcast time about like two tastes that you think taste great together, but other people might find kind of gross. I imagine that shrimp and grits would be that thing for some people, because some people like really don't like grits and some people really don't like shrimp.
That's true.
Or just allergic to them. But awesome. Yeah, I enjoy it. I get every chance I get.
I'll try it out.
Cool. Yeah, Chris is very Lydia-esque. He also reminds me of a Harold from Harold and Maude. It's got the kind of same look. Yeah. And first time we see him, like, he's laying down in coffin position. And he gets into the hearse and he's like, oh, I feel at home here. And lays down with his arms crossed over his chest. And the kid just wants to be dead. And that's kind of cool. I mean, it's interesting for a character in the show.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. It's a little bit, yeah, it's a more complex character than we used to on this show, where all the characters are usually just like a new kid at school, like a new kid in town kind mm-hmm. of a thing. The ghost reveal, when the kid finds out that he's a ghost, like he goes home and like he doesn't realize he's dead yet, and he like goes back to see Ryan Gosling, and Ryan Gosling's talking on the phone and he's trying to talk to him, and Ryan Gosling's ignoring him, and then like he kind of puts it together like in The Sixth Sense. Like, I thought that scene was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he realizes it, he's like, oh my God, you can't see me. And then his theme music hit. He was like, bam, 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 bam.
Yeah. Bam, bam. That part's sweet.
Mm-hmm. He started wearing jorts. I thought yep. that was cool. I thought a bit in this that they were making kind of a kind of satirizing bureaucracy and like stuff like that, because, you know, there's a lot of waiting and a lot of having your number called and blah, blah, blah at the radio station. And then at one point, Gilbert Gottfried, who's great in this episode, he's like spooky, but he's also still Gilbert Gottfried.
Yeah.
And also he was on the newest Ilkhan, or the second newest. So people should listen to that.
Nice.
He said, when I was alive, I worked at the DMV. So I'm glad that I was on the same page with the writers of this episode. Mm-hmm. Also a very funny joke. There's a really spooky door in this, like the door that leads you to either heaven or hell. It's very like Gates of Hell, like Augustine Rodin-esque.
Yeah, man, you nailed it. That's exactly, I couldn't remember like who the artist was for that, but that's it. It's very detailed. Looks a lot like that same piece, and pretty scary too. Like, it's making some pretty terrifying noises once like the first person goes through. The kid gets his first like eye and earful of what happens. So it's like this giant glowing light, but it could just be hell back there. So they don't do like the harps, or well, they do like a softer sound later on when somebody ends up going to like a better afterlife. But yeah, the bad version of it, woof, that was rough.
Yeah, yeah, it's scary. And yeah, like the door's got like skulls and like little faces and stuff in it. It's pretty spoopy.
I like that it's also just in a stockroom. Like, there's boxes of shit next to it that they just haven't stored properly.
Yeah, yeah. It's like boxes of records and stuff.
Yeah. I just watched Beyond the Gates over the weekend.
Oh.
And it reminds me of when they find the gates in the basement. It's like, yeah, here's some, like, an old couch, stacks of comic books.
Yeah.
And this spooky gate that we have here.
That's true. It is a lot like that. I wonder how Jackson Stewart will respond to these allegations of plagiarism.
Yeah. What say you, Jackson? So I think one of the coolest parts in this, though, is when Gilbert Gottfried is doing his radio voice. Because when the radio first projects some DJ's voice from it, I thought it was somebody else. Like, I thought it was just going to be another dude and Gilbert Gottfried would show up in some capacity. And you don't quite see it until like halfway through when the kid is kind of stuck in the waiting room. Like that Fugazi song. Mm-hmm. Isn't that right? Didn't they play that at some point?
Yeah.
In this episode?
Yeah. It was like a really cool radio station. They played a bunch of Fugazi and like early REM stuff. Guided by Voices.
Yeah, it was wild. But the kid's like creeping around the radio station when no one's in there. And then Gilbert Gottfried comes in. He's like, you're not even supposed to be in here. And he gets up to the microphone and then he does like this. He kind of arranges his face and contorts his body in a weird way and just starts talking in this very like not smooth, but like old timey smooth. Like, this is how radio broadcasters sounded during like the 20s or 30s for those radio dramas. He's like, you're listening to 109.1, the radio to get home. He just sounds so unlike himself, and I don't think there's anybody else doing dubbing for those scenes. I think that was just him, like, doing a goofy-ass radio voice, which I thought was really funny. And interesting for Gilbert Gottfried, who, again, like, has the kind of squawking voice, who's only like a year or so out of having performed as the parrot in Aladdin.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's really good. Like, I think that if they would have got, like, their normal, like, Canadian local actor to do this, it probably would have not worked as well. Because, yeah, like, he's normal Gilbert, where he's screaming at people, then he does the radio voice, and then at the end, like, he kind of has, like, this solemn moment where he tells the kids about how good heaven is, and it's like, he does a lot of stuff. It's he's pretty good. Also, he hits people, like, when you're dead, you have to wear a bracelet, and it's a slap bracelet. Like, it's just a slap bracelet from the 90s. You remember those, Mr. Frisbee?
Hold on a second. Yes, I am a 90s kid. I do remember this.
Okay, I thought so. I didn't know if I would have to link you to a BuzzFeed article to
to jog my memory.
Yeah, but yeah, slap bracelets were super cool. And that's when you die, apparently you get hit with one. So I think that's fun.
What a way to go.
Yeah, this is a good episode. Like...
Mm-hmm.
Episode number 4, The Tale of the Mystical Mirror. This is a Betty Ann story. Employees from a boutique are disappearing, and no one knows why. Soon after getting, because apparently there are no cops in this town. Soon after getting a job there, Cindy discovers the truth. The owner, Mrs. Valente, is really centuries old, and with the help of a magic mirror, is using her youthful employees to stay young.
Okay, see, that's like a couple sentences shorter than the previous one. Could have just said, like, a radio station is guiding folks to the afterlife, but what happens when a kid who's obsessed with death gets mistaken? You could have done something so much shorter for that previous one. This one, there's like potions, fucking dogs, multiple mirrors. Like, they don't even bring up the mirror in this. Oh, yeah, there it is. Excuse me. The magic mirror. But there's multiple mirrors anyway. And there's too much shit going on here. So, yeah, Ms. Valente is played by Charlize Theron's stunt double in this.
Mm-hmm.
Striking similarity.
And also very foxy. Usually the older people. Fox. The older people in the show are usually like dumpy old senile old bats. Who can't cook soup.
Just burning plastic bowls.
Yeah, so I was shocked to see a foxy lady on this show.
I was practically shaken by it. But yeah, like, this gets real convoluted, though. Like, she's, for about the first and second act of this, like, those first 20 minutes or 16 minutes or whatever, it's really just like this foxy adult woman trying to coerce like young girls to wear makeup at her fashion boutique. And she's saying all this weird shit to them too, like, my beauties. She calls them almost exclusively my beauties, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And what else was there? She's like trying to get them to come over to her place, which is a really bad sign. Like, any adult who's trying to lure young kids to their home to look at like the latest fashions.
Mm-hmm.
And the friend I was watching this episode with the other day pointed out that like one of the hot fashions in her, she liked to be surrounded by beautiful things and hot fashions. And one of those beautiful things or hot fashions was like just a straw hat, like hanging on one of those hat hooks. So obviously this person's like bullshitting everybody. You just don't go to somebody's house like that. Like, oh yeah, cool. So this really shitty scarf is the hottest thing? Mm-hmm. It sure is.
Yeah. It's really weird that like she's like, the new fashions have come in from Paris. We get, or Milan. We've got to take a look at them. But it's like, she, like, her store, like, I don't understand why, like, just, like, this store in, like, this tiny little rural town in Canada would need the high, like, the greatest fashions of all time. Like, why doesn't she live in Quebec?
Or, yeah, Toronto.
I mean, I guess because they couldn't afford to film there, but it seems weird. Like, they leave her shop, and then, like, literally across the street is just, like, miles and miles of empty fields and stuff, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like a full-ass forest. And mm-hmm. That's where the episode starts. I thought this was going to be like another flashback to like centuries prior. But it's this girl like running through the woods and trying to escape a cloaked witch-like figure that's pursuing her. So eventually, like, this woman obviously gets two of the other employees to come by. The girl who wants to get a job there and is refusing to wear makeup is kind of snooping around and learning the awful secret that this person is actually like an old witch. When they use like a compact mirror or something, mm-hmm. she's able to see the true age of this person, the true appearance. But the other friends are being like drugged and stuff. They're getting poisoned, and there is a cool effect. Like after one of them gets poisoned by this particular potion that she drinks out of a fucking chalice. Like everything in this is like, hey, drink from this really weird ass cup in my weird ass home that I've invited you to because I'm a real creep. They're just all these red flags. So it's real strange when the kid's like, yeah, okay, I'll drink from this weird ass chalice here. And obviously she chose poorly because her eyes light up. And that, again, like that effect looks cool. Then somehow they turn into these fucking huskies. Like they're some kind of hound, like a wolf like dog.
Yeah, that part's really weird. Like they didn't need that part. Like, that's a little too, that's a bridge too far for me.
Tell me about it. And you're wondering, like, I was wondering, like, what is she doing here? And the only explanation that you get is that she's like running a fire with these three accumulated dogs that she has. She starts reciting some incantation about like a beauty of, or a tongue of dogs three from beauty's once young girl. It's real shitty. And I'm not doing any like favors, obviously, but what I gathered is that like she needs a spell to be forever young, mm-hmm. and she can only do that by cutting the tongues out of dogs that used to be young girls.
Yeah.
So fucking stupid. I hated this.
You hated the whole thing?
Yeah, except for like, you know, the attractive lady. She was great.
Yeah. Well, I feel like you're missing two key parts of this that make this one awesome.
What's that?
The first is that the girl discovers the horrible secret by pulling out a frisbee-sized makeup compact out of her fanny pack.
Mm-hmm.
Which was pretty cool. Like, I don't know why someone would need that much makeup. It's like really big.
Yeah.
And two, like she, you know, when she's like using the mirror and then she sees the pictures of the foxy lady, but in the mirror, they're like old and decrepit. And mm-hmm. like that basically makes this a Dorian Gray story. And that's like the tightest shit in the world.
This is pretty cool. Yeah. Vanity is like a good topic. They haven't tackled too much on this show. So yeah, that part rules. I just didn't like the lazy bullshit of like, you have to get dog tongues, but specifically dog tongues that used to be teenage girls, but specifically attractive teenage girls. And yeah.
Yeah. Like they don't need any of that shit. Like they could have just like streamlined this and made it so that like the girl is like the protege of the foxy lady. And like at some point, after working there for a while, she's like, hey, here, I want you to be an old kind of witch like me. And she's like, no, that would be the wrong thing to do. But instead, like, they bring in all this other shit, the drugs and the wolves and all this. It's like, who needs it?
Yeah, man. Yeah, that stuff sucked. But the Dorian Gray stuff, that was cool.
Yeah. Also, there's a throwaway line. They're like, after we solved the mystery and turned the foxy lady back into a senile little bat, her house and her shop collapsed. It's like, I don't know. Why you gotta throw that in there? Like, why would that happen?
Yeah, she goes to the storyteller for this one, Betty Ann, goes to great lengths in her wrap-up to be like, so there was nothing left except for the witnesses. That's also a weird part. Like, when that girl, I forget how she gets rid of the witch. I think in most of these Are You Afraid of the Dark stories, they have to like break something that the evil spirit or witch or creature likes, mm-hmm. and then that creature like just completely evaporates. That part ruled, actually. when that the witch goes all like Indiana Jones and the
oh yeah, that looked really good
in the Ark. Yeah, like she turns, she starts aging rapidly, and then turns into like a skeleton in the hood. That part looked cool.
Yeah, I like that.
That was pretty
part.
Slick.
Yeah,
but this young girl Sydney just effectively straight up murders a witch out in the woods like that. Like breaks this mirror into the fire, and the witch is like, "Oh, why'd you do this? It hurts so bad." And it's great that like, they don't overlook that either, because the actress who's playing that young kid who just committed, you know,
murder,
homicide on a witch is really disturbed by it. Like she's kind of like takes her a second to collect herself and be like, what the fuck? And then her friends have turned back into human young girls instead of the dogs that they were.
Yeah. And then it was weird that the girl had to kill them too so that they wouldn't tell.
There's like so many murders at the end of this episode.
A lot of murders.
Yeah, they should just call this one The Tale of So Many Murders.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Betty Ann at the end of this is like, and then the witch collapsed into an ugly pile of dust, and the place where she lived and the store where she worked also collapses. It's just like, that's a bit excessive. You know, I mean, most of this place would be like, hey, where'd the owner go? Oh, I'm missing, huh? Well, we better close and reopen this as something else. Somebody who can actually pay the rent.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that was all a bit odd.
I agree. The oddest part of this episode, though, is the wraparound story, because Gary's little brother and Stig bring hot dogs to cook on the fire beforehand.
Yeah.
And Gary is livid. He's like, no fucking hot dogs allowed at the Midnight Society. Like, he's like so pissed. And I don't know. I don't know why you would be so mad about hot dogs. Maybe Gary sucks after all. After years of letting him have sex with my wife, I feel like maybe he's not a cool guy anymore. Because he doesn't.
But at least your arm feels better though.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sucks. That is so fucking weird. Who knew that a guy who would have sex in front of other people's spouses would be such a weirdo about a phallic food item. He's just real bent out of shape about it.
Yeah, not cool.
No. But what's even weirder than that is that Lovecraftian mess of a hot dog spigot that the kids have made.
Oh, yeah.
There's like 8 or 9 hot dogs on this branch, but it's not like they're all evenly laid out so they can cook evenly. It looks like a Christmas tree of hot dogs, and it is disturbing. And it's too horrible to describe to give it that real Lovecraftian feel.
Yeah, it's weird. There's too many hot dogs, and like they're not going to get cooked evenly like that, all branched out like that.
Mm-mm. Nope, it's just a weird mess. I don't know. I can't imagine them being appetizing, but also it took like 30 minutes to get through that story. So those hot dogs are probably like, you know, room temperature by now.
Nasty.
Just the worst. That's Stig though. And he's being like a real stand up dude by like offering people like how many you want? How many buns do you need for this? So yeah, it's a very generous offer for some really gross food.
Yeah. You know, yeah. I respect that he brings enough hot dogs for everybody, though.
Yeah, but did they bring chili and cheese for it? Mm-mm. You know?
They didn't do that.
They didn't bring limited run andouille sausage either.
No, they didn't bring any of the good stuff. But
no, they just, dialed it in and decided to cook them in the most idiotic fashion possible.
Mm-hmm.
These kids.
Ah, these fucking... These millennials.
These millennials today. That's going to be the next BuzzFeed post. It's like, do you cook hot dogs like they're a Christmas tree?
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess that's all of it. That's the end of the show, Frisbee. That's all the episodes.
Yeah. That's the first part of season 5.
Yeah.
Of Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Yeah, we'll be back next time with more of season 5. You want to do more? You want to do 4 more?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Oh, hell yeah. that episode comes out the first week in November. That's basically still Halloween. That's fine. So, yeah, we'll have that. Derek Carey from Astro Radio Z will be here. He's a nice man,
Sweet.
Frisbee.
Very nice.
So that'll be fun. Also, if you need more Frisbees, you can check him out. He's you got a podcast. Tell the kids where they can find his at Twitchies.
Oh, you can look for The Blind Podsman, his at Twitchy podcast, which I co-host with Patrick from All Kill Cast, and he's also been very funny guest here on this show. The Blind Podsman reviews Adoichi films, and we're coming back at it. We got a few more left on that run. And yeah, if you like swordplay or blind swordplay, I guess, then this is probably for you.
Everybody likes blind swordplay. This is for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of things that are for everybody, you can search for Podcast Town and Facebook. It's a group where we all hang out. You know, we do stuff. We share gifts with each other. We enjoy each other's companies. We viciously attack strangers. Things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it is not a safe space.
Not safe at all. Not safe one bit.
But it's specifically not a safe space for people who do not like safe spaces.
That's true. And it
is very ironic.
Yeah. It is a safe space, though, if you like sharing GIFs of Korean pop groups. Like, that's
yeah.
How you'll be embraced pretty quickly if you come in with that.
Or delicious looking chili dogs.
Yeah.
Also well received.
Yeah, very well received as well. Find us on the Facebook, search for Pool Party Radio. We're there. Find us on Twitter at Final Parker and at Cumulus Frisbee. Find Wayne. Find him in the streets. Shove Wayne. That's a new contest we have on the show. Find Wayne in the streets. Find him on his paper route. Shove him.
See, yeah.
This is for
Kids
Sean
in the Hall
by.
Did a Poke Bellini contest.
Oh,
this
yeah.
is our version of that. The Shove Wayne contest.
Shove Wayne. Don't do it very violently. Just shut. Just enough. Just forcefully enough that he knows you're there. I like that, Wayne.
Me too.
So yeah, that's everything. So until next week or next time, this is Parker for Cumulus saying thanks for having fun.
All right.
Hey guys, it's me, Wayne, back with the Podcast Town News update. Some pretty important things happened since I last talked. Everyone get mad at Wayne in Podcast Town because I defend guy making gay jokes. Anyways, I'm kind of a dum-dum and I'm sorry. I'm also sorry for eating carrots while I record this. I love carrots. Duh. Duh. Anyways, everyone mad at Wayne in Podcast Town, especially Shelby and Corey, because, I don't know, I guess they probably have way bigger peepees than me. That's okay. Sorry, I'm also drinking some Mountain Dew right now. Duh. Duh. Anyways, I mostly just sit in my basement and look at the internet all day, so I don't have much else to say, except that La La Land is Wayne's favorite movie, and Donald Trump, pretty good president.
Wayne, get up here and take out this trash! You've been down there almost 16 hours!
Well, sounds like Wayne has to go. Mom is taking me to swimming lessons later. Thanks for listening to Podcast Town News. Duh. Duh.
The logical contraption.